Stop faxing strangers so early. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 197.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you again today because this is my podcast and it is Tuesday, April 6, 2021. I hope everybody is having a great week so far. We got a great episode for you today. Returning to the show, Rick Roberts. I hope you're aware of Rick Roberts. He is the host of the School of Laughs podcast, one of my favorite comedy how-to podcasts. And he does a little bit of teaching of comedy, both stand-up comedy writing and the business of comedy. I highly recommend, if you're looking for some classes, he's been doing virtual stuff now. Go to schooloflaughs.com and you can sign up for, you know, register for some of his classes. I highly recommend it. But he was on the show again. He returned. It was great. And I was just on his podcast, actually. So if you want to check that out, I was on his podcast, his last episode, School of Laughs podcast. So that was pretty cool. But then he did mine again, and that was cool as well. And on our podcast here at The Art of Bombing, we talked about setting up Zoom shows for success and approaching comedy bookers. Because if you've been a big fan of this podcast and you listened to the previous episode with Rick Roberts, you know that he's been in comedy for a long time. He primarily does corporate comedy now, clean comedy, church comedy. But he's been in the industry for a long time, and he's been very successful with what he does, and he's very knowledgeable about setting up shows, and so he always has a lot of great insight, and I'm always, always excited at the chance to pick away at his brain and to get some nuggets to help, you know, further my comedy, and, well, hopefully further your guys' comedy, so it was a great conversation. But before we get to that, we got to take care of the housekeeping. That's right. We got a few things to take care of on the housekeeping front of things. If you're paying attention, you probably noticed if you're subscribed to the podcast that I've been re-releasing. I just started last Friday re-releasing seasons 1 and 2 of the Art of Bombing podcast because it was brought to my attention. They were not available anywhere on the webs. I thought they were, but I thought, you know what? We're almost to episode 200. We've been doing this for 4 years, and I thought, you know what? That'd be cool. Why don't I do that? So Fridays are going to be re-release day. So Tuesday, you get a new release, and then Friday, you get a re-release for the time being. If it gets to be too much time, I will say this. I might cut it back and do the re-releases every other Friday. But for now, I'm going to do them weekly. So go check those out. I will warn you, though, this is a disclaimer. The audio quality on a lot of those early episodes is terrible, and there's not a lot I can do as far as making it better. It was because of the technology that I used to record, which was my cell phone for most of those episodes, so it's not going to be that great. So audio quality, not so great. The content, on the other hand, is great because I talked to some great comedians in those early episodes and they had a lot of great insight on comedy and bombing and all that. And it's cool. It'll be cool if you're new to the podcast to go back and listen to some of those early episodes to see how we progressed and how we developed as a podcast, because I really didn't have that during that first episode. I really didn't have any idea where I was going with it other than I wanted to talk to people about bombing. And throughout the years, I've got a better formula, better format, and I've gotten better at doing the podcast. So go check those out. The next thing I want to talk about real quick is the newsletter. It is late. The April newsletter did not come out on time. I do apologize. I was on the road traveling for comedy and for gigs, and I just didn't have time to do it, which is good news for you because that means you still have time to go to artofbombingpod.com and sign up for the monthly newsletter, and you'll still get April's newsletter. Why do you want to do that? Because it's got great content in it, you know. Sometimes I put some essays and articles. I'm going to be doing the new 10-spot article is going to be in the newsletter, where I'm interviewing comics, not about comedy. We're doing fun, random questions. The first one features my good friend Larry Smith, who I got to see while I was traveling this last weekend for comedy. So you can blame him. He's the reason that the newsletter's running late. But anyway, go to the website, artofbombingpod.com, sign up for that. I only send it once a month. When you sign up for the newsletter, you're not getting bombarded with a bunch of spam because it's a monthly newsletter. That's it. That's all I'm doing. Send it once a month. There's no other, oh, check this thing out we did on the Art of Bombing. Check that out. No. It's one time, once a month. Usually it's the first day of the month, but like I said, it's running late. It will be out by the sometime this weekend, probably just in time for the weekend. It'll be great. You can check that out. And then while you're at the website, you know, why don't you, if you want to pick up some swag, you can do that. You know, we've got pushback pins, we've got stickers, posters, there's apparel. You can get all kinds of fun things on the artofbombingpod.com website. And of course, if you really want to support the show financially, and by no means, this is not required, and I don't want anybody to feel pressured, but if you'd like to, if you feel inclined to support us financially, you can do that on the website. You can go to artofbombingpod.com, and you can leave just a one-time donation if that's the way you want to do it, or you can support us on Patreon. That's right, we are on Patreon, the patreon.com/artofbombingpod. We only got two tiers. It's, you know, very, very minimal, but each tier has some great, great perks that go with it. Great things you can get merch, and you can get you're going to get exclusive bonus content on the Patreon, such as the video version of the 10 spot spotlight. That's going to be available there. So to get the 10 spot spotlight interviews, you either have to be signed up for the newsletter, or you need to be part of the Patreon community, the Patreon family. But again, don't feel like you have to. If you don't want to, don't. The best way you can support the show will always be by listening, sharing the podcast with your friends, and then rating and reviewing. That's the best part. Rate and review wherever you listen to this podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and leave a nice review. We always appreciate that. It helps us get into the algorithms, I guess. I mean, that's what they tell us podcasters. I don't know if that's true or not. But finally, before we get to this episode, the last thing I just want to promote, I have a couple of virtual shows coming up. Actually, tomorrow, I have my show that I host, Virtually Clean Comedy. That's at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. It features a bunch of comics from across the country, all doing clean comedy. It is a free show. You can watch it from your living room, and the tickets are free. They're available at blitzedentertainment.com. And then right after that, I will be on Outhouse Comedy at 9 p.m. Central Time. Be doing a little guest spot on that show. That, again, is virtually. And both all the information for both of these shows are available on my website, danbublitz.com. All right, that's enough of taking care of this housekeeping. Housekeeping's over. We've cleaned it. We're done. It's time to relax and get into this episode. So here is my conversation with my pal and the very talented, very funny Rick Roberts. Enjoy.
And now it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
Had to drive across Kansas a while back. How many folks ever do that? Never gonna do that again. I got a used helicopter off of Craigslist and see how that works out. Don't get me wrong, the people of Kansas are nice, if you can find one. They're out there. I kept seeing these signs, BYOP. It's bring your own people, because they don't have none of it. That tornado from the Wizard of Oz took them all, apparently. I knew it was going to be flat. I didn't realize that the highway patrol had to be extra sneaky, because they don't have nothing to hide behind. You know, they have to drive these unmarked patrol cars, because if they didn't, you could spot them 6 or 7 hours away. So they got these Mustangs and Transams and Camaros. Sometimes they're pulling a bass boat, and that's just cheating right there. But I don't know. I'm in the right lane. Guy goes flying by me. I'm like, I ought to keep up with that dude. He's probably got a radar detector. He had the radar, and I did not detect it. So I start trying to catch up to this Trans Am. I'm still in what I called my Dave Ramsey truck, the drive-it-till-it-blows-up truck. 1996, 3 out of 4 cylinder Isuzu pickup with a camper top on the back. That's a woman getter right there, ain't it, ladies? Well, I finally start catching up to him after like a half an hour. He starts slowing down, speeding up, swerving all over the road, kicking up gravel. I'm like, this guy has fallen asleep behind the wheel or something. I should get his attention and see if he's okay. Whew. You ever been so stupid you pulled the cops over? Anybody else? There's some paperwork involved, let me tell you. I don't know how to pull anybody over. I just roll down my window and roll it down like, woo! That's pretty good, isn't it? I've been working on that. He pulled over, so I pull over behind him. I wait for him to get out, but he doesn't. So I figure I'd go see if he's all right. Walk up to his window. I just start pounding on his window. Meanwhile, he's been loading the revolver over there. He cracks the window, and I see he's an officer, and I got zero game plan. But I start thinking I should arrest him for reckless driving before he gets me for speeding. But I don't know how to do that. All I know is I'm watching the Andy Griffith Show my entire life, like Barney Fife. I just walk up there, I'm like, hey! Would you mind rolling down the window? Wanna get out of the vehicle there, buddy? You're a big one too, aren't you? Look at you. Want to know why I pulled you over? Because I'm an idiot.
Kind of going back to, you know, being in Nashville is kind of a hot spot for comedy right now.
It is.
I mean, with comics moving out, migrating out there, it seems like Austin and Nashville have really attracted a lot of comics.
Yeah, and I'm a little behind the curve on knowing all the comics that have moved here, but I know a ton have moved here this past year, and there's two or three reasons for that. You know, comedy, we only have one club, so it's not that we have 10 clubs going on that have comedy nights. We've just got Zanies. There's plenty of open mics to go work out material in. But there's also a comedy record label here, 800 Pound Gorilla, that are based in Nashville.
Okay, and so they're based out of Nashville.
Yeah, a lot of comics that have relationships with them are like, man, these guys are cool, and they've got, you know, they've built the podcast studio at 800 Pound Gorilla, so I expect many comics to start doing podcasts out of that facility pretty soon. And, you know, and plus it's just a great place to be. And some of the older comics, not really old, but older, you know, now that they've got families and kids, they don't want to live in Los Angeles or New York City, and they move to Nashville because it's a great place to raise a family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it seems, I haven't been to Nashville, but it seems nice. It seems like it would be a great area. I mean, between listening, you know, I listen to your podcast, The School of Laughs, shameless plug for you. So I hear a lot, you know, you talk about Nashville quite a bit, and then I'm a big fan of Dusty Slay, who's also in Nashville, and I listened to his podcast, and he talks about Nashville quite a bit. And between the two, I'm like, that'd be a fun place to go check out.
Oh, man, there's a ton of great comics. You know, Nate Bargatze lives here. He's one of my favorite guys. His dad's really cool. His dad's a magician, and I've had him on the podcast too. He's a fun guy to check out. But, you know, Kathleen Madigan has a place mm-hmm. here. Henry Cho, Jeff Allen,
Oh, wow. I didn't realize. I know. I mean, I've heard of all them names, but I guess I didn't realize they were all based out of Nashville.
Yeah. Johnny W., a good buddy of mine, and Brian Bates, who works with Nate a lot. There's just a ton of good guys here in town. So I haven't really been to too many shows over the past year. You know, just got my first jab in the arm a couple of days ago. So by May 1st, I'm going to be out and about and hitting things up and catching up mm-hmm. a little bit on the local scene.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm still waiting for my jabs. I'm still going out, but I try to be as cautious as I can. You know, if I get road gigs and stuff, like I was just in Wyoming last week where, you know, to them, COVID doesn't exist, essentially.
Yeah.
And but I was wearing my mask. I didn't care what kind of looks I was getting. I was wearing my mask and doing, you know, carrying my hand sanitizer and doing what I could to be safe. But it's,
yeah, you got to do it, man. You know, I've been super safe. I haven't flown in a year. You know, I just booked 3 flights for August this morning. Things are opening back up. But that's the one thing my wife's like, yeah, if you could not fly, mm-hmm. and if you do some driving gigs, that's okay if they're really safe, you know. So, but I'm glad that the one shot's in. Hope you get yours soon. Hanging out around the pharmacies because at closing time, if they have an extra one, like if somebody didn't show up, they'd rather give it than, you know, some of them they have to throw out if they don't use it that day. Mm-hmm. So I just started hanging out 3 nights in a row. Kroger's and grocery stores that have pharmacies, and I just walk up there. I was like, "Hey, you got any extra, man?" And they're like, "Hang on, we might have some in a little bit." She goes, "Circle, and come back around." So I come back around. Hey, how we doing? It's looking pretty good, but I gotta have her do the count. And sure enough, I was able to get in there and get one.
Oh, that's all. Hey, that whatever works, that's good. That maybe I'll have to go do that. My problem is I'm just lazy, and I'm like, yeah, fine, you know, go hang out at the store. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I could just stay home.
Right.
It's funny because a lot of people from the social aspect of all of this, it's really, really affected them. And for me, I'm just like, outside of not being able to do as much comedy, because honestly, I thought when the whole pandemic started, beginning even before that, so 2020 was going to be the year I was going to do comedy full time. Like by the end of the year, I felt like I was going to be able to do comedy full time. I had a whole bunch of gigs scheduled all the way into May. I had my dry bar taping was scheduled for April. So I figured by the end of the year, that'll be coming out and that'll help, you know? So I had all these things in place where I was like, this is going to be the year. And then COVID hit. And obviously that changed everything. And I didn't go full time, but
right.
That on the social side of things, you know, people are always, you know, it's affected them socially, but I'm just like, oh man, now I don't have to make excuses not to go hang out with people. And I can just stay right. home with my lady and my dogs and not yeah. feel bad that I'm not going and doing stuff with other people.
It's pretty funny, man. I like getting out and about, but I'm definitely, when things were normal, I was traveling so much that when I got home, I really didn't want to go anywhere. You know, it would be hard to drag me away. So I'm curious how much the initial reintroduction to society will affect my plans. You know, I definitely am itching to go out. There's a new material Monday night at Zany's every single week, and I'm like, oh, I got all kinds of new material I haven't even had a chance to try out yet. And I'm just still kind of waiting because, you know.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that show that you're talking about on Mondays, that's been dedicated to a lot of them guys that have moved to Nashville, like the heavy hitters too. Like there's – if you're in Nashville and you feel safe enough to go out, I do recommend going to that open mic because you're going to see some great comedy on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's jam packed and, you know, and the crowd turns up for it. So I'm looking forward to it, but I'm like you, you know, I can be a homebody. I saw a great meme about a month into the pandemic. It was a computer coder pre COVID. And he said at the typewriter and says during COVID, same thing. It was no difference at all.
Yeah, that's about right. That is about right. I love it. Well, this has been great catching up, but this is the Art of Bombing. And I can't, even though this is your second appearance here on the podcast and you told some great stories before, I'm sure you've still got, you know, with a career like yours spanning as long as it has, you've definitely got some stories you can still tell. So I'd love to hear another story.
Sure. Well, because this year's been different, there's been less chances to bomb. So maybe that's good, but there's been less chances to get better, and that's bad. But I think there's been a lot of chances to relearn and find a new way to do stand up. You know, so I'll give you a couple of bombs. I'll give you one from the online world and then one from a live show. So help me keep on track of getting to that second one. I'll start with the one that was the online. And I think at the beginning, I mean, some people jumped right into it. They didn't even see a reason not to try it. I was a little, I'd actually turned down quite a few gigs early on. And I remember somebody had referred me to somebody, like, he'd be perfect for you. And then he called me and I'm like, no, nobody can do comedy on a Zoom call. This is the worst idea ever. And he's like, wait a second. You know, the comic, she said, you'd be perfect. I'm like, no comic would be perfect. I said, and that's the way I was approached, you know, for the first 2 or 3 months, really. I just turned a bunch of stuff down. And then I realized, well, maybe I need to learn how to do it. And the other thing was I was starting to write material. I'm like, I need a place to try it out. So I'll try that on a Zoom show and get some feedback. And if it works on a Zoom show, probably in a live show, it should work great, you know, with a better sampling of a bigger audience and stuff. So, so the first one that came across after I'd changed my mindset was for clients who might put their parents into assisted living facilities. And they would normally have a big picnic and these people would come from all around the state and tour the facility and see if it'd be a safe enough, clean enough place to put the relatives. Well, they couldn't have anybody there and they still wanted to have something where they could have people get to know the staff and get to see the facility. So they were going to do that and then have me do comedy through Zoom and then everybody could watch this. And it was going to go out to like 1,300 people or something like that across multiple states. So I said, all right. We agreed on a price and she said, so how are you going to do your show? And I'm like, you know, what I was thinking is I'll come out, you know, say hello, do a few things, and then I'll play some of my best clips. I'll play a dry bar clip. I'll play a Huckabee set. I'll play different things that are really high recording so people can see me in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll know that I'm funny just by the audience laughing. And really the whole time in my mind, I'm just, how do I reduce my risk of not being funny on a call? And I was showing stuff where I'm already funny. So she thought it was a great idea. And I do a Barney Fife impression where I've got the uniform and stuff. I do that for some company events. And she goes, with our age group being older, it'd be great if you could pop in there and work Barney Fife in some way. I'm like, well, that'd be no problem at all. Throw on the hat and jacket and maybe put up some trivia questions and people can answer, you know, A, B, C, or D in the chat box and you get some engagement that way. And that part actually went great. People loved that. And
I could see that because as you were saying that, I was just like, are you doing trivia nights like that? Because that sounds fun.
You know, that could be
another side thing for you.
I thought about it for a hot minute of putting together some kind of package where, hey, you know, Mayberry trivia with Barney Fife impersonator Rick Roberts. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to. You know, it probably would have got some traction. There's a lot of people that were looking for anything to do, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
But so this gig was going to be 45 minutes total. And that's why I wanted to have those pre-recorded clips in there. So we start the gig, I come out, say hey to people, you know, how's it? Beginning of every Zoom call, there's people logging in slowly and with their age group. How do we, I got a link, but it's not working in my browser. What's my browser mean? You know, like they didn't even know the terminology of how to log on. So like in the first 10 minutes, we had like 6 people out of 1300 that were invited have logged in. And 4 of those were administrators, I think. So really only 2 people from the outside. So as I'm doing a little bit of comedy, I'm getting text on my phone. Hey, we need you to stretch. We need you to do about 20 minutes before we really start into the comedy. And so I'm already like, nobody's even watching. So I've got to stretch for people that aren't watching. What do I do? And so I burned through a ton of material with nobody there. And then about the 20 minute mark, she goes, hey, we've got 500 people on the call now. Go ahead and start what you planned. So all this again, while I'm looking at a phone and trying to do this and looking in the chat box, which all of it was kind of new to me. And so I go to play my first clip. And on my computer, it looks great, sounds great. And then I get a phone call on my phone. She's like, nobody can hear the audio at all. And I'm like, So I go through and try to find the settings and I can't find anything that would change the way it sounds. It's coming through my speakers. And so that clip ends and I'm like, I understand we had some audio issues. I believe the next clip will be fine, you know, and I clicked it. And then she calls me up again. She goes, they can hear, they can't see nothing. And so everything was going wrong. And on top of that, everyone was muted and their cameras were turned off. So it was like projecting stuff into a vacuum. Like I really didn't know if there was a reaction at all. And so, you know, after the third clip didn't work, she texts me, she goes, just do your set live. I know you're not in front of a crowd, but just do your material live into the Zoom call. Cause we can hear you when you talk. And then we'll do the Barney Fife trivia stuff at the end. And so we did that. And that part, on all accounts went fine. They could hear me. They could see me. I couldn't hear the reactions at all. So it was, I was just staring at the camera like this, doing jokes, you know, and at the end I said, hey, I have no idea if you guys laughed at all. So just, here's my email address. Shoot me a message. Here's my Facebook and Twitter. You know, let me know in a comment if you enjoyed the thing or not. because there's just no way for me to know. And then we went into the Barney Fife trivia, and that, so it ended up being like an hour and 10 minutes total. It should have been 45 minutes. And after that, I was like, man, I mean, I walked into the other room and just, my wife's like, how'd it go? I'm like, she goes, yeah, it's going to be tough. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be tough. And so the next day I got an email from the lady. She goes, hey, the first 45 minutes was just the train wreck with technological issues and all that kind of stuff. She goes, but when you do the comedy to the straight to the people, it was great. You know, we get great feedback. She goes, so, you know, say what you think about it down the road. You might just want to do it straight ahead and not play any clips because people had issues with it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, all right, maybe I'll do another one at some point. Probably another month went by before I got my next one, and people called me up to do one, and I just did everything straight ahead. I still had their, so I said I want the mics to be unmuted and I want the cameras to be up so I can see everybody. I said, that's the only way that I know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, all right, no problem at all. So, and that was the day before. So the day of, about 10 minutes before I start the show, I get an email. She goes, I can't make it to the Zoom call. I've got called into the office on something, but we've got an assistant that's going to take care of everything for you. I'm like, okay, no problem. So right before I start, the assistant goes, okay, our comedian's coming up. We're so glad you guys are here. He's a funny guy. She does my little intro. She goes, oh, and if everybody can mute their microphones and turn off their cameras so we can focus on him.
Oh, no.
And so, you know, as soon as she introduces me and says that, I'm like, okay, forget everything she just said. Unmute and let me see who you are, because it doesn't work if I'm just shouting into the Ethernet, you know. And maybe 10% of the people turned on their cameras and another 15% turned on their mics, and we got some laughs. And, you know, I just had to make it – what I learned from all those is the third time I did it, I just said, I have to have a co-host on the side. So in Zoom, you can administer a co-host. I said, mm-hmm. I'm going to be focused on doing the show, but I want the co-host to tell everybody to keep their mics and their cameras on. But if you hear somebody who's got a dog barking or you can see that it's them, you go ahead and mute them. I can't be doing that while I'm trying to do comedy straight ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
That's one of the things I noticed with Zoom. If you almost need to have somebody to run tech, essentially, to monitor that kind of stuff to make the show better. Because it is hard if you're the only one doing it to, like, try to mute people, or, you know, you just can't because you're trying to focus on telling your jokes.
Yeah, it's tricky. And here's the other good thing, the positive that I've learned, and it took me several more before I learned this, is that you have a huge advantage when you're doing a Zoom show over a live audience, and that everybody can see everything that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the galleries are, now you might not see all the galleries depending on how many people you have. There, you know, when there's 200, there's like 6 galleries or 10 galleries to swipe through. So you're not going to see all the same people. But if it's a smaller show, you can, I mean, I can see in, if you've got the Art of Bombing thing behind you and you've got this, mm-hmm. I could find something in your room to talk about. And I've done that on several shows while we're waiting for people to kind of log in. I'm like, hey, before we get rolling, I just want to kind of get to know you. Hey, Dan, man, what's that podcast thing behind you? What that's all, you know? And it's just like you were having a conversation in the, you know, the lobby before a show starts with the people. And people love that. And the event planners really like it because they don't know what to do at all when they start a call like this. They're just like, I'm just going to come in right and introduce you and get out of there, because they're not public speakers. But as a comedian, you can facilitate a conversation with people on a Zoom call. And the more you do it, the more you get comfortable with it. So you always look for those things in the background that I can maybe mention. I might even say anything up front. I might wait for a particular joke where, you know, what they have in the background, if they're like a big sports fan, they've got a Titans logo or a Tennessee Volunteers logo or whatever, Ohio State, I might be able to plug that into a tagline with one of my jokes about sports. You know, and Bob would know what I'm talking about, huh? Bob got the big Ohio State, and they get a big kick out of being recognized from it. So it's kind of the opposite of being heckled. You single out them for a positive thing that kind of adds to your comedy show. And that's a lot of fun. And then the last thing I'll say about the Zoom calls is I always advise if the facilitator wants that, I'll stick around for 5 or 10 minutes afterwards if people want to talk, or, you know, do a Q&A. Some of my clients have done Q&As because people have questions about comedy in general or about specific jokes. And that's just like hanging out in the lobby after the show. People can come out and say, hey, man, I really enjoyed that thing. And thanks for doing this. And we haven't laughed that hard in a long time. And that's not necessary for a comedian, but it's really helpful to have that poured back into you after you've poured out for a while, for people to go, hey, man, that was really something else. I don't even know how you thought of this. And those are the things I like most about doing a show, is hanging out afterwards and just hearing what people saw from their point of view.
Yeah, no, that's good. And that's a good way to look at it too, because you're right. Like, it is hanging out, you know, feels like you're hanging out before and after the show. So it's a good way to make it feel like it's like a real show, you know,
yeah.
And it, especially with this virtual comedy, you want it to feel as real and genuine as you can, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the same as a live comedy show. But it's definitely, like, there are so many different tricks. Like, I jumped on to virtual comedy almost right away, not necessarily because of the comedy. I guess it was more because I needed to figure out a new way to do my podcast. And so that's where I jumped on to, like, streaming and things like that. And the first thing I learned is that my technology was outdated.
Yeah.
I did a lot of upgrading right away. But then I started doing some of these shows, and it's all in how it, like, you know, there's comics that still haven't done a Zoom show and they think it's absolute worst, and that's their opinion. They have the right to that, but I've actually had some pretty fun shows. I mean, I've had bad ones on Zoom calls or whatever, but, and you know, it just really depends on who's running it, how they're running it, and the, what platform, you know, they're running. Like, I've had the Zoom ones have been great for the most part, you know, because you can hear the audience and things like that. Some of the stuff I've did on StreamYard, not the same experience, because it's like you said, you're just like throwing your material out into the vacuum, out to the void. Mm-hmm. You have no idea if people are responding or reacting to it.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is you have to be more audience focused on a Zoom call than you would be in a club. At a club, mm-hmm. people do come to see you or to see a show, but a lot of times on a Zoom call, it's an obligation or somebody has talked them into it. And you just have to kind of forget about the reaction you're going to get and see what you can give to them. You know, the probably the best Zoom thing that I've done this whole year was for a group up in your neck of the woods. It's in Jordan, Minnesota, which is southwest of St. Paul. But they were doing a fundraising event for a Catholic school, and they wanted to do a Zoom call. And what he did was I had my camera set up, and I did the Zoom call to a small sample of an audience live. So they had maybe 30 people. And so they had them in the audience, and he was projecting me on a big screen, and then I could see them the whole time. And he filmed their reactions. I sent him my full tape of my camera, and he cut it together. And then they did the fundraiser 2 weeks later and pushed that out to everybody. So they all watched it at the same time. I think it was a YouTube stream or something.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so you could see that I was doing comedy. I could see the audience, and they would cut back between me and the audience. And I had a chance to interact with the audience because I could see them, you know, as a group, a small group. And I got an email back yesterday. I said, I just wanted to follow up and see how that whole thing was cut together and what it looked like. And he goes, man, you would not believe it. We raised $217,000.
Wow.
From that night. And, you know, they did a couple little things before me and afterwards, and they mailed out these dinner packages to everybody. You know, I think it was $150 a ticket. So they got this dinner they could cook and a bottle of wine, and they watched the comedy show. I'll send you a link to that if you want to see it, just between me and you.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be interested to see how they did that, because that sounds very interesting.
It was really a true hybrid, because they had a small audience. So when the bigger audience watched, they could see that everybody's having a good time and they can laugh. Because that's the thing, we have to train people that it's okay to laugh on a mm-hmm. Zoom call, just like you have to do in a comedy club. They're always looking to the front row to see what the vibe is. So, and the pastor that was in charge of that, Father Baker, he's like, man, this is great, because now they know you're funny and you're not speaking into a vacuum, and it's a great night that we have for everybody. So,
well, bravo to them.
Yeah, because it's
that's
a little
some forward
work,
thinking.
You know? And I kept thinking, how's he going to edit this stuff together? It's not that hard. It was just my camera and his camera, but if I've watched the stream, and it's like, man, I wish every event was like this. Have a small studio audience, even when it's going to virtual groups, so they can kind of get the vibe and the feeling of what's going down.
Mm-hmm. No, that's smart. Yeah, I'm definitely interested to see how that turned out. Now you said to get you back on track, because you wanted to talk about the live show as well.
So this is a little less, the bombing's never great, but at least when you bomb on a Zoom call, you can go mow the yard after and forget about it in about 10 minutes.
Or shut the computer.
Yes. And done.
Exactly.
So the trickiest thing about this next gig, and this was a live gig, it was just a few weeks ago, and it was it was for school superintendents. They had a conference. Every other speaker, I think, at the conference had to cancel or reschedule or do something. They had comedy. They wanted comedy to kick things off, which they often do to kind of get the energy up. And my gig was at 8 in the morning, 8 till 9, 1 hour solid, which is hard, but I've done it before. And it's in a normal setting.
Gigs.
Yeah. In a normal setting, though, it works, you know. And normally they would have had 300 people at the conference or something like that. And it would have been in a smaller room, just like the old days. But this, because they couldn't do that, and because nobody's having conferences, this particular conference center gave the superintendent group this massive ballroom. I mean, it set several thousand people. And they put chairs out to seat 500 or 600 people. And there was less than 75, 80 people in attendance live.
Wow.
And 90% of them sat in the very back, which was at least, and I'm not exaggerating, at least 75 yards away from me. So, over 250, 300 feet, just back. A couple people in the front row, but way on the far right, almost like at the other end of a basketball court far away. So those were the only two people I could see and hear. The lighting was poor. The audio was great. But if they reacted and when they reacted, it was so far away and so delayed that it was just like by the third, fifth minute, I'm like, man, this is – and it was a really good paying gig on top of all that. So you feel even worse when it's – you know, if it was a freebie, mm-hmm. I'd be like, hey, this isn't working. I'll see you later. But I'm like,
yeah, right.
Just like every minute went by, I'm like, oh, there's another few bucks. You know, I was mentally going, okay, this is a set of braces here that, you know, I got to keep on track. And so after about the fifth minute, I just looked at them and go, listen, I know it's 8 o'clock and they're wearing masks. I said, mm-hmm. And I know we're spread out and I know it's not the brightest stage up here and we don't have screens. They really needed screens to see me if they were going to be sitting that far back. They couldn't see any facial expressions. And so I just stepped aside from my act and just addressed it and said, listen, the only way this is going to work is if you guys forget that we're in a pandemic. So the reason I'm here is because they wanted a comedian to lighten things up. You guys deserve to laugh. You're, you know, school administrators in the toughest school year in the history of the world. So this is for you. I'm doing this material all works. I'm not throwing out new, you know, this stuff is tried and true, but I need you guys to come along with me so that I can, you know, it's going to be a long, we got 55 more minutes. It's up to you. You want to have fun? And after I said that, it lightened up and it got better. It was still very hard for the rest of the time. I mean, just that many people, that few people spread out in that big of a room mm-hmm. with a poor lighting. The audio, like I say, was fine, but it was just so discombobulated that at the end of it, you know, I wrapped up and I get, for those type of events, I get somebody up on stage to sing with me and that always goes great. So it ended on a nice high note. The show definitely kind of ramped up from the beginning, but it was a slow ramp up. It was like going up a mountain on a pair of roller skates after an ice storm. It was just like, how am I going to get through this thing? But, you know, that's what they pay you to do, and that's why they pick somebody's experience to figure it out. And when I got done, the event planner goes, that was hard, wasn't it? I said, that was extremely hard. She goes, thanks for doing it, though. She goes, I could see somebody just walking off and saying, heck with this, you know. She goes, but our people enjoyed it. You know, everything's cool.
Yeah.
But for the whole drive home, you know, 5.5 hours back home, I'm like, ugh. You know, should have tried it. You know, you don't know till you get there how mm-hmm. it's going to be set up. You don't know till the show starts if you can overcome it. You just have to work your way through it. So,
yeah. And I know from our last conversation when you were on the podcast, you talked a lot about the corporate stuff of comedy. You have a pretty thorough questionnaire to eliminate issues like this. So having them pop up is, you know, probably pretty rare for you. But still, I mean, I'm sure it still happens, but trying to figure out how to get around it can be difficult.
Yeah. And I gone through that whole 10-point checklist with her too. And, you know, the lighting for a comedian was horrible for somebody that's going to go up there and talk about, you know, the grant money coming from the state of Alabama for whatever. And that would be fine for that person because nobody cares what their facial expressions are. But the seating, I mean, probably, you know, looking back, I should have just had everybody move forward into the first six rows because it still would have accommodated 300 people, you know,
mm-hmm.
so they still would have had plenty of room between them. And comedy is the good kind of contagious, obviously. The more you hear people laughing, the more you loosen up. And when people are so spread out, they don't even know if you're laughing or not. I mean, you really couldn't tell. If somebody yelled from the back of the room, I might be able to barely hear them. That's how far away they were.
Wow. That's, yeah. That definitely makes it more difficult, you know, when you, cause you know, that's the thing too with comedy. Really, it's an energy thing where you're feeding off each other's energy. It's a give and take. And, you know, mm-hmm. if you're that distanced, it's just so hard for that to make that connection.
Yeah.
To really,
yeah, I probably should have started making a lot of jokes about the situation. Like, hey, nobody's going to catch the disease in here because you're not even catching these punchlines. You know, just like address it. But I never want to take
it
out of the audience. But that was what's going on back in my head. I'm like, hey, we all woke up early for this. Let's make it a good thing. You know.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes just being honest with a crowd like that, you know, is sometimes that's what it takes to get them to loosen up. You know, I actually saw a comic one time. We did a show. I was on this like showcase, and it was at a marine training facility in San Diego, and there wasn't a ton of people at the show, but there was one big table like right in front of the stage of like 12 people, and they were rowdy through the whole show. They were pretty much heckling everybody, and just, you know, being young, being them, making it about them, having, you know, whatever. None of the comics really, you know, we try to deal with it here and there and throughout the show and go back and forth, but they were just ruining the show. And then finally, the last comic that was headlining, Trenton Davis, who's a great comic out of California, goes up there, and before he even does any jokes, he just sits down on the stool and he just lays it out as like not mean. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't rude or mean or but he just went up there and he basically took a teacher moment, and he was like, you know, you guys don't realize this, but you're the worst audience ever. You know, he was like, your job is to sit there and enjoy the show and laugh at the comics. But you're not doing your job. You're interrupting the show. You're doing the opposite. And like he did this little spiel for like 5 or so minutes at the beginning, and then they like calmed down, and then he did his set and just crushed.
That's awesome.
It was amazing to see that, because he was just like, you know what? Before I do any of my jokes, I'm just gonna come up here and be honest with you. And he did it in a way where he wasn't being mean, he wasn't being rude. He was just like, I'm going to have a conversation with you about this so we can have a good time going forward.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's weird to step out of being the comic and being the enforcer, especially if you're like a fun loving, happy go lucky kind of guy. But sometimes mm-hmm. you just got to just say, this is what it is. And we can make it go this way or the other way. I'm still walking out of here getting paid. And you know, I might not sleep as well tonight if we don't do it the right way, but you know, there's things. There was, I'm trying to think of where it was when I did a show. I think it was Lexington, Kentucky. Yeah, Comedy Off Broadway, which is a great club. They kind of train their audience to expect good comedy, and they don't put up with a lot of nonsense. And Jeff Gilstrap, the guy who founded the club, he passed away a few years ago, but he had this great way of getting rid of hecklers in the club. It was just genius. So if a table was heckling, they'd find the person that, you know, was in charge of that group, and say, or whoever had the credit card for the night, basically, and have a waitress go, we've had a problem running your credit card out in the front. Could you come out in front and see if we can figure it out? So like the go-to person at table will come out in the lobby, and they go, what's wrong with my credit card? Like, nothing, but you guys are being jerks and we're gonna have to kick you out. But wait here. And they would go get the next person at table, go, he can't get his credit card to work. Can you come out here and bring your purse?
Wow, that's brilliant.
They would slowly evacuate that whole table, and they'd be in the lobby, and they can control it from there, and it wasn't interrupting the show anymore. And sometimes the comic would notice, hey, 6 people from this table had to get up, but it was 6 people from the heckling table, and nobody cared that they were gone anymore. And sometimes yeah. he would just pay for the drinks and say, just get out of here. It's better for all of us if you just go. These drinks are on me, but just leave. And I just thought, how smart was that to remove the problem from the room and then from the building?
No, that is absolutely smart. That's like one of the best techniques I've heard. Because I actually seen at the San Diego Comedy Festival that we had a situation where something happened with somebody, and there was a loud confrontation between the owner and the guy, and him trying to get him to pay his bill, and the guy got mad and he threw his receipt at the comic on stage, and it was pretty embarrassing, because also it was a contest, and so these comics only have so much time, and this is going on and disrupting the show or whatever. But if they would have just did that, crisis could have been totally averted, you know, just get them to go out. I mean, I didn't even work at the club. I was just helping with the festival. And finally I was like, we can't keep this in here. And I shooed the guy into the bar, like, you know, I was just like, let's go. And of course the guy was like screaming at me the whole time. He was like, you better not touch me. I'm like, I'm not doing nothing, but just keep walking. We can't do this in here.
Yeah, you almost have to be like a rodeo clown. Come on, buddy.
Leave that guy alone.
Focus on me. Yeah. Leave that guy
He's
alone.
Like, don't worry. I'm not going to touch you, and I hope you don't touch me. We got to get out of this showroom.
Yeah, that's why I'm glad that you have podcasts like this, because you can learn some of those techniques and share them with some other people. Like, you know, there's ways to get out of this a little less beat up. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, that's brilliant, getting them to go out to the lobby and then take care of it from there. So smart.
Yeah, pretty slick.
Yeah, no, I think all comedy clubs, I mean, that's the other thing too, like with comedy clubs and hecklers, like there's comedy clubs where they're very good about it. They're like, they don't mess around. These are the rules. They'll give them a warning, out. And then there's clubs that don't care at all. They don't do nothing, but it's good to have like a, you know, that kind of medium, because that is really smart the way he did that.
Yeah. And you know what I found when I worked at comedy clubs all the time is that it really came down to a money thing. And usually the hecklers were the ones that were spending the most, the drunkest, and they didn't want to kick out somebody that was bringing them in some cash. But the reality is, if nobody enjoys the show, they're not coming back. So you're letting one person get away with it because you think you're making some money. But if 20 people never come back to your club because they had a bad experience, that's thousands of dollars over a course of a lifetime of a club that you just lost out on.
Yep. Not to mention, you know, we live in a day of, you know, the internet and social media, you know, just they made that, you know, those 20 people that had a bad experience may go leave a review. And not only did you lose them 20 people, but their negative reviews that they left for what happened is going to prevent other people from coming. So you're not only are you losing future business, are you preventing potential future business too, which is, you know. A lot of people don't think about that. It's always like in the moment, this is what's happening now. They're spending money now, but you don't think about that potential loss down the road, which is a good point.
Well, I think comedians never think long term because, you know, we don't even think short term. There's a reason we're comics. We can't hold down a regular job. So
yeah, exactly.
Comedy clubs are still ahead of us, but they're still thinking in the moment too. They're not thinking 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's actually a good transition, because I do have some other questions that I want to ask you that I don't necessarily ask all these questions when other guests, but because you have so much experience and then, you know, you teach a lot of great classes from writing to business classes. I actually took one of your business classes and I got a lot out of it. It was great. It was a great class, well worth the money that I spent. But I've had people, so I do some, like, I have a workshop myself that I've been doing, which is a electronic press kit workshop, because a lot of comics don't do anything with that or use that. So I've been doing this little workshop or whatever. But I'm also, with this podcast being, you know, about comedy and trying to get better and that kind of thing, I've did some other little mini episodes where I talk about like business of comedy and stuff that I know, you know, from being in the business or whatever, but there's some things that I don't know. And somebody wanted me to do an episode about contacting bookers and things like that. And I was like, I just don't know that I should do that, because I don't have that kind of experience. I'm still trying to figure out the best methods for that kind of stuff. And then I was like, you know what, you know, who does have a lot of experience with this kind of stuff? So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that too. And I know you talk about it in your business class, about, you know, kind of, you know, maybe some quick tips on, you know, what you should and shouldn't do when contacting bookers. I mean, because also with comedy, it's like a secret to figure out who books what.
It can be. Because I think, you know, comics in general have a scarcity mindset where they don't think there's enough work and there's too many comics, and they don't want to give you any information on how they got a gig because you might take a week away from them and those kinds of things.
Yep.
So that's part of the problem. But when it comes to contacting bookers, there's two or three things I think hold true no matter where you're at. So it's very rare I wouldn't say it's completely unheard of, but it's very rare for a booker to ever take a call or answer an email from somebody they just don't know, that they've never heard of. And especially so if they do any kind of research on you at all, if you pique their interest and they do a Google search or a YouTube search and you don't have any material online or you don't have a web presence or what you have is bad or it's not what they're looking for. I mean, so the first thing would I would say is be bookable. Make sure you are bookable for the kind of gigs they book before you even try to get in touch with them. But really the best way to get to them is through somebody they're already booking, you know, through a comic they already trust. And it can be tedious. I was never a big fan of doing it that way when I first started. I don't like to use the word, well, I do like to use the term coattailing, but I don't necessarily like the process of coattailing somebody. And that's basically using somebody else's situation to get your situation better. There's really, it's just called networking, really. But comedy, I saw so many times where somebody would just, I don't even know the right word, worse than sucking up to a headliner to kind of get on their good side so they would take them on the road and do different things. And it's just one more method. It's not that any method is better or worse than another one. But with booking agents and booking bookers in general, you do kind of have to get to them through somebody they already know. So
yeah,
if you don't know, I mean, the easiest thing to do is if they book a wide variety of stuff is just look at their rosters, their schedules, you know, who's coming up at the club this week and last week, and all subscribe to those newsletters that every club puts out. So you can kind of see, and eventually you might see a comic, you know, or a comic you've worked with and you can go, oh, so-and-so is working there, you know, Jim, whatever. I mean, I'm just going to shoot an email to Jim and say, you know, who books that gig? Like, you know, what's the booker's name? You don't have to put in a good word for me. I'm just kind of curious who it is. And then Jim will either come back and say, oh, it's whatever. Don't use my name, but that's who it is. Or they might go, hey, man, I'd be happy to pass your name along and say, hey, this would be a good comic for you to check out. And so you can kind of start feeling it out that way. And you might even want to get two or three comics that you know that booker uses before you even try to contact that booker at all and say, hey, I've worked with these three comics. They all said I should probably contact you and firing off an email, see if that works. Again, chances are if they don't know you, they still may not reply. If you get a hold of their phone and leave a message, they're probably not going to call back. It's really about somebody almost wanting you to be their opening act or be their feature act. And that's how you get to know the booker.
Getting
the
those
booker
recommendations.
And just getting that one time at the club and then the booker gets positive feedback on you or negative. And then they proceed from there. But when you think about it, I mean, we think of it from a comics perspective. Hey, I've got a funny act. I'm as funny as that guy. I should be able to work where that guy's working. But the reality is the booker who books that gig has thousands of that guy already working there. And so you have to show why you should replace somebody they're already booking, which means you can put more butts in the seats. It's not even about doing a better show. You know, if you and the other comic have the same show, they might even have a worse show. But if they're willing to accept the gig for how much it pays and they never rock any boats and just show up and do their job, that person's still going to stay on and you're not going to be brought into it. You almost have to think about how good do I have to get to knock somebody out of the rotation that this booker's already using. With that, the booker might like hanging with the person, even though they're not that great of a comic. And so you still can't bump that person out.
Yep. No, so, that's very true. I mean, that likability goes even beyond the stage sometimes.
Yeah. And as much as I don't like it with social media being as strong as it is, I know for a fact, I've talked to bookers and they'll look at that and go, oh, I don't know who this guy is. And then they watch, oh, this guy's horrible. Oh, this guy has a million followers. We'll book him. It's the reality that we live in.
Yep.
So if you can be good, funny on stage and have a big social media following, you should be able to get put into places. But it's usually one of those three things, if not two, are out of whack. And that's why they're not putting you in.
Yeah. Now, what about just to kind of follow up on that? You're already in with a club or with a booker and sending avails, you know, like what do you, as far as how, you know, I know you talked about it in your class and I don't want you to have to give away all your tips because, you know, you want to get people to do this class or whatever, but sending avails and stuff, do you have some tips for that? Cause that's another thing people, you know, don't know, like even me, like I'm terrible about this. I feel like I could probably get booked more if I was better at sending out avails, but I just don't think about it. That's on me. But, you know, when I do, it's always good to know you know, have a better idea, you know, kind of how often, you know, what I should and shouldn't say, that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, the great thing about this is once you're in with the booker, they'll just tell you, hey, shoot me your veils once a month. Shoot me your veils anytime something changes. You know, when I was in the clubs nonstop, you know, I started off sending the veils through faxing. So, like, every Tuesday or Wednesday morning, I just automatically set up my computer to send out these 60 faxes to people with my schedule on it, you know. And then once email hit, kind of did the same thing. And then, you know, some bookers would just say, hey, first of every month, just shoot me your veils. I don't need to see them every single week. You're killing my fax machine over here, man. You know, I even had started to set it up to where, because it took so long with dial up, that I would set it to start shooting faxes off at 4 a.m. and it would be faxing for 3 hours. And then by whatever time the booker got into the club, they would see this fax and I'd be maybe first person they'd look at. But this guy called me one morning at 6 a.m. He's like, dude, I have no idea who you are. You're faxing me. And his fax machine was in his house. Like, it never dawned on me that people were working from home.
Oh, yeah.
So three or four months in a row, I was faxing this guy at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., 6 a.m., whenever it got through to his number. And he eventually just called me and said, man, you're killing me, dude. We ended up talking for like 20 minutes. He said, well, okay, I kind of know what you're about now, but you should never really fax somebody you don't know. And he said, especially at 4 a.m.
That's funny.
So,
at least funny.
Now, the other thing I'll say about avails is different bookers like them different ways. So you may not just have one system that fits everybody. Yeah. I don't. I've got three or four different ways I send them out. Some like I say, want them every month. Some just want a link to your schedule. They'll check it whenever they want. You keep that schedule up to date. So you might want to set up a Google Calendar and invite those bookers to be able to access your calendar so they can see it whenever they want to. You don't have to worry about ever sending an avail to that booker. If they want to book you, they'll just hit the link and boom, your schedule pops up. If you're free, they'll give you a call. So I definitely do that with a couple of folks. And then I have another link. This might sound more complex and people want to deal with it. You don't have to do all this, but I have a link to my avails that has the cities that I'm in and what kind of gig that I'm doing. And this has really helped me move into the corporate field when I started doing that. Cause I was working comedy clubs and I would put in, you know, this week at the Looney Bin, this week, wherever, the Zanies, then this week, corporate event on Friday in Dallas. And, you know, after a few times of people seeing the avail like that, they're like, oh, you're doing corporate events now. We get calls for those all the time. We don't know any comics to send them to us. We'll throw some your way. And then, you know, I remember accidentally being carbon copied on an email to a new guy that I've been trying to get in with that booked corporate events. And he replied all instead of back to his partner. And he made the comment to his partner, this guy booked 20 corporate events last December. We need to get on this guy right now. And so I don't think he realized it went to me too. So I'm like, okay, I'm on their radar now. And so I sent them a specific email, you know, with some links to some reviews from recent corporate events that were in their area. They were in Texas. And I said, hey, these are three events I did last month in your area. I'd be happy to call these guys and connect you with them so you can book comics for their next event. I've already done it. So, and then that got me in with those guys because like, he gave us work out of the blue. They just feel obligated to give you some work back. You know, mm-hmm. So I gave them business in their own area and they were able to book comics and make the commission off of those guys. And so from that, our relationship grew and they saw that I could help them instead of them just helping me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Which that, yeah, that definitely makes sense. Cause it's definitely can be a give and take, you know, cause a lot of times it is about building relationships with, you know, especially with bookers and things like that.
Well, that's the other thing I'll say too, is it's 100% relationships. When I was on the road doing clubs, and I keep saying that, but I haven't really done clubs, you know, out on the road very much at all anymore. I've been doing corporate for 10 years, but I would make a point, like if I was in Grand Rapids, I would stop by the booking agency. I would stop by Funny Business. I'd give them a call and say, hey, can I stop by for lunch today? I'll bring you guys some sandwiches. Go have lunch and get to spend 20 or 30 minutes face to face instead of on the phone or through email with the booking agent and develop a relationship, mm-hmm. You know, John Yoder, who runs Funny Business. I remember doing that and his kids were like getting off the school bus and coming in the office and hanging out. And now their kids are booking the gigs, but I've known him for 20 plus years. Cause I stopped in and said, hey, you know, same thing. Anytime I passed through a club town, maybe I was working in Chicago and I was driving through Louisville to get there. I'd pull over, you know, on the way up to Chicago and pop in the Comedy Caravan and say, hey, to Tom, the guy that was booking those gigs back at the time, and just stick my head in the office and go, hey man, just wanted to say hi, I was passing through. And they're just like anybody else. A lot of times they're working hard and nonstop, but they don't mind taking a 5-minute break to go outside, smoke a cigarette and chat for a few minutes. You never want to take up too much of their time because they are in their work mode, but they're happy to see somebody off stage. And it means a lot to them that you stop by just to say hi.
Mm-hmm.
So the more times you can do that, the better. And then those relationships just evolve from there, you know?
No, that's really good advice. That's definitely something that you don't, you know, I personally, I guess I wouldn't have ever thought of that, you know, to do what you just said, you know, if you're passing through a town, just to stop quick and say hello, because that really shows too, it shows that appreciation too, because that's the thing with a lot of comedy bookers, they get hit up by so many people all the time, and you know they feel unappreciative for the stage time they give, even to the people they're giving it to, because it's anytime somebody contacts them, they only want one thing, and that's to get booked, whatever they're booking. And beyond that, that's, you know, that's it. So when you're going above and beyond and trying to be like, hey, I don't want you just for this, you know, I want to be your friend too and build this relationship, that's, you know, definitely helps a lot.
Yeah. And you know, if you're in the early stages of that relationship, maybe the booker hasn't booked you for anything yet, but you've been exchanging emails back and forth. Why not just volunteer to do a show for nothing? You know, back in the day, I remember this booking agent out of Atlanta I was trying to get in with, and I just couldn't get it. Either the gigs came in and I was booked, or the budgets weren't right or whatever. And so I made a point for about 3 years to contact all the bookers that I could drive to and say, listen, 4 or 5 times a year, I want to do a show where I just give back, do a free performance. I'm not worried about the budget. Just put me up in a hotel. I'll drive down and back. But I just want to do, just kind of give back a little bit. You've helped me out over the years, give me some bookings. And man, none of those spots ever went empty. I always got a call. Hey man, we've got a fundraiser coming up at the club. Like you said, it doesn't pay anything, but it'd be great. And then they get to see you do a full hour or 45 minutes or whatever they book you for. And you, even though you're on stage, you're building that relationship for that 45 minutes or an hour. And now they know exactly what they're going to get when they book you somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like an extended audition, and you're helping them out. Even if the fundraiser did pay them, you know, thousands of dollars to have it at the club, they pocket that, and that's great for them. But you got the exposure for a little while without getting paid for it. And on top of all that, you're building a few more contacts in the audience and your email list and all those other things that go with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, every business does coupons. They do buy one, get ones, or that kind of thing, or a free trial. I don't know why entertainment needs to be any different.
No, that's a very good point, because you're right. Because you're also, it's also giving you that chance, like you said, to do an extended audition where, you know, because a lot of times when, you know, I've been to a couple different seminars and things about getting booked, and they'll always say, well, just, you know, if you're passing through a town, call the club, ask if you can get a guest set, you know, if it's okay with the headliner, so you can kind of showcase. But if you do that, you're only going to get, you know, 5 to a 10 minute spot. So you might not be enough time to really showcase what you can do. Or with your method, you really get to showcase what you can do, you know, being able to do a full set.
And, you know, another sneaky thing you can kind of do on the side is bring your video camera. And now you've got 45 minutes on stage at the Improv or the Funny Bone or the Zanies or whatever you're trying to get in that you can make some clips out of. So, you know, we could get into a lot of different details about how you can get paid with, you know, digital assets instead of money when you do a show. But that's one thing you can do for sure.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any, like, I know you, like you said, you do more corporate stuff now. But when you were doing clubs, and we touched a little bit about it, you know, asking other comics and stuff, there any other things that you ever like trying to figure out who books different things? You know, like one thing I guess I've tried doing, and I've found out who booked to do in this way, is I've just contacted the, you know, went to the website of the comedy club and just like emailed the general info and just did like a feeler, you know, where I'd send an email and say, hey, I'm a comic. interested in maybe talking to whoever, you know, submitting for consideration, you know, try to be as polite. And a lot of times you never hear back, but once in a while they'll tell you who to contact. Did you ever have to do anything like that? Or do you have any advice on that?
No, yeah. I mean, I had to do it before the internet even. So when I was in clubs, I would just call the front. I would just call the box office, you know, or I'd send a Pony Express from Wells Fargo with a telegram and say, "Hey, can you chisel an answer in this tablet for me and send it back by a raven?"
You had a bunch of carrier pigeons.
Carrier pigeons, yes. They're very loyal, and their GPS is better than Waze will ever be.
I love it.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's any gig out there within 10 minutes you couldn't call around, or especially now do a web search to figure out who booked something. Like, to me, it would be harder to not find it than it would be to find it. You know, and again, the comics working there are the best go-to person to find out. So I would hit up a comic that you know, or if you don't know any of the comics on the roster, on the schedule, call some of your other buddies and say, "Can you look at this website? Do you know any of these people? Can you find out who books this?" I don't think it would take very long at all to figure it out. You know,
yeah, that's true.
Getting them to return your call or your email is the hardest of all things.
Yeah.
But again, I think
go ahead.
I just think again, being active on social media and having good clips and a great website and those kinds of things. So if they do get interested, they click over and see, you know, I probably wouldn't pursue anybody until I had some good stuff up so they can find some good things.
Yeah, no, and that's solid advice, because that's the worst thing you can do is if you don't have good material up there. You know, a lot of comics make this mistake. They're excited because they performed and they just want to throw a video up on social media, and it might not be terrible, but it's not necessarily good either. It's mediocre and it's not enough to get booked. And then now that booker, that's all they associate you with, is either that bad clip or that mediocre clip. And it's going to take even longer now to get into that club, because you're going to really have to show that you've worked and improved and so on and so forth.
Oh yeah.
The
first impression in comedy is brutal. Like there were clubs when I first started that I could drive to that I really wanted to get into. And luckily for me, a couple of really nice comics said, "Hey, this guy, you only get one chance. So, you know, you're pretty good, but if you want to get on it and get booked and be booked over and over and over, wait another year, wait another 2 years, wait until you've got 20 minutes instead of 10, wait until you get, you know," they just kind of set me down and said, "Hey man, we like you, but this is the only way to get in with this guy, is to blow the roof off the place when you get in there." And so, you know, it feels like forever when you first start. You know, if you've only been doing a comedy for a year and somebody tells you to wait another year, you're like, "Oh, I'm never going to get good at this." But in the grand scheme of things, you've been in it 10 years, you know, 2 years goes by just like that. I mean, you don't want to wait 2 years, but you can wait 2 years for some things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I said, being in comedy as long as I have, which isn't compared to like you, isn't that long. I'm still a baby, but I'm still just think about it. I'm like, man, I can't believe I've been doing this for over 10 years. So yeah. You're right. It does go very quick.
It's a weird, very weird thing, the time and space that a comedian has on their career. You know, some things go by so fast, other things just take forever. I think it's why you just kind of got to stay in the mode you're at and do the best you can with where you're at. Before you know it, you'll be 10 times further down the line if you're doing all the right things. But you can't part-time your way into comedy. Every day, every week, you've got to be doing something to move things forward, which I think is the biggest frustration a lot of new comics have. Like, they do 6 open mics in the course of a year, and they're like, "I'm not getting booked anywhere." I'm like, "You shouldn't be getting booked anywhere. You know, it's just
you're not ready.
It'd be like a band, you know, doing 4 gigs over the course of a year and thinking they should be opening for Pearl Jam. Like, you could be good, but there's just no track record. So go get the track record, hustle. You know, you got to be doing it when nobody else is doing it. You got to be doing it when you don't feel like it. You just got to get out there and just make it part of who you are. I mean, I think a good comic, I think the best comics are ones that wouldn't want to do anything else, and they're not even contemplating doing something different. They're just finding a way to make this work right now.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very true. And I like, just kind of going back to what you were talking about with the signing up for the comedy club's email list to see who's coming. That's another great tip that I just wanted to highlight, because you're right. That's the best way to see, keep track of who's, you get the email right to you. You don't have to go to their website constantly, and it's a good time saver.
Yeah, you know, back in the day, I did a lot of that, and I just set up a different email account for all those kinds of things, all the newsletters, so it wasn't coming in and getting pushed away or deleted, you know, once a month, once a week, whatever, whenever I had time to kill, I would just go into that folder and just go through all of them and kind of see what, you would see one guy's working here, then he goes there, then he goes there, and like, oh, maybe that same booker books those three things because they were booked 3 weeks in a row, or maybe it's just a regional reason that they're booked into those things, but you can kind of see little patterns.
Oh, yeah.
And then this would probably be the advice that sounds most opposite of the truth, but it's the most true, is that if you go to a comedy club website or you're looking through the emails and they've got like, say they're showing the next 3 months, they've got 12 comics up there, 12 headliners. And you're like, man, I'm just like that guy. I'm perfect for this club. Well, they already have that guy. They've already got the redneck, or they've already got the whatever. What do you do that's different? So when they see you, like, oh, we don't have this kind of act in our rotation. This would be great to give our audience some variety. It wouldn't be just like five middle-aged white guys in a row, 5 weeks in a row. You know, what do you have that separates you? And play that up, you know, and embrace that and you know, make that more of who you are in your marketing, so that they just don't see one more guy or gal who's just like the guys and gals they have there already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. It's easy to, it's easy as comics to like compare ourselves and, you know, and even get to that where we're like, well, I'm funnier than that person, you know, even though, you know, you're could be the same essentially.
Yeah. And the reality
definitely
is most of us are pretty much the same. I mean, there's a, even within our act, there might be 5 minutes that's way better than the rest of our 55 or whatever. In the grand scheme of things, as much as we like to be unique, we're all kind of doing the same thing. So you got to find it, what makes you different, and embrace that. And it might not even be the thing you like, but mm-hmm. it might be the thing that works.
Yep. No, that's very true. That's very true. Well, we've been at this for a little while, and I do have a few things that have been a little different in my format from the last time you were here. A couple questions that I like to ask everybody. You know, I didn't get into the analyzing bombs because we did that last time, which is fine. But one of the new things that I've been doing is I've created a playlist on Spotify called The Art of Bombing. Get pumped. Oh. It's the, you know, it's a playlist of songs that comedians have picked that they use to get pumped. Do you have a song that you listen to that gets you pumped?
Like a pre-show pump up, get your adrenaline rolling kind of.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
You know, that's a good question. I tend to get real quiet before shows, you know, and just kind of find a place where nobody is and kind of focus on what I'm doing. But if I'm trying to get my energy up, you know what song I can't help it. There's two songs that I can't help but listen to and jam every time I hear them. One is by Dexy's Midnight Runners. Come on, Eileen. Got the accordion and the violin. Dun, 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 dun. It's got the drum solo. It gets a little bit quicker in the middle. That's a good toe tapper. And Oh Black Water, keep on rolling. Mississippi Moon, won't you keep on shining on. Like, you can't help but sing along with that show. So that would be another one that I would, if I had this rotation. And I'm going to have to check out your Spotify playlist. This is a great idea. That's another one that just kind of gets you moving and gets you vocalizing a little bit, which is probably a good thing to warm up your vocals before you head out there on stage. And then, you know, any AC/DC song, any Queen song where it just rocks out. We Are the Champions is any of those anthems, you know,
I think would be great. Anthems are always good for getting pumped. And you can almost any AC/DC song will get you going.
Oh, it's the same song, just 60 different ways.
Exactly.
That's six different songs right there off the same album.
Right.
But they're all good.
So true. So true. Yeah. You got to love it. And then you have a gig that you, what's one of your favorite gigs that you've done? I know this is probably going to be hard, you know. As long as you've had it as a career, probably had a lot of great shows.
Some of my favorites were in the early 2000s. There's a radio duo down here in the South called Rick and Bubba. They're syndicated and they're out of Birmingham, Alabama. And they're both heavier guys. And they would have this thing called the Fat Fest every year. It was like a big outdoor concert. And they'd have ton of comics from their that were on their show a lot come in and do sets, and they'd have bands come in. And I just, as weird as it is to say, I loved being outside doing comedy. It was such a great setup, and it was packed. It'd be like 3,000 or 5,000 people in an amphitheater. And, you know, I remember I went on after a band called Hayseed Dixie, speaking of AC/DC. So they would do mandolin and violin versions of AC/DC songs and banjo. It was Back in Black, Hit the Sack, Ain't It Good to Be Back, you know, just kind of.
That's amazing.
And just everybody's in a great mood. It was family friendly. It was, and my comedy fit in with that. And I would go out and play 4 or 5 songs in my set and just have a ton of fun. Those, I think, were my favorites of all time, just because it was like being, they always say comics want to be rock stars and rock stars want to be comics. And, you know, Weird Al's got both of them covered, but
yeah, right.
It was kind of fun to go out and get thousands of people to sing along with the song and kind of be, you know, it was just different and fun.
Mm-hmm. No, that sounds pretty amazing. Now, I just remembered a question I wanted to ask you earlier too, about, you know, because you're corporate comic, which means that means you're clean comic, and you do clean comedy, and you have done for years. And do you find, because we were talking about going out to open mics and doing more material, you know, working on material, do you find it difficult as a clean comic going to some of the open mics to try to work on your material? You know, like, because you, and what made me think of this was when you were talking about that comic that was a little bit bluer than Mitch, and then Mitch had a hard time, because it's always hard to follow. Like, you can be blue after a clean comic, not a big deal, but it's a lot more difficult to be a clean comic after a blue comic. And so I wondered, do you ever struggle with that?
You know, all of that is up here. If you're funny, it doesn't matter if they just heard a filthy guy or a filthy lady or whatever. If your jokes are tight and they're well written, it doesn't matter. It can be, you know, it can get in your, like, the thing I don't enjoy is when the audience is really loving somebody before me that's filthy, and I think that's the only reason they're laughing is because they're filthy. I don't hate the comic for doing that, and I know my set's going to go the way my set's going to go, but I'm like, oh man, I just wish this audience expected more from their comics. Or, but you don't know till you get up there. But for me, mm-hmm. No, I don't. One of my best shows ever, headlining Zany's here in Nashville, was after the filthiest guy I've ever seen. And he was killing, but it was filthy. And honestly, by the time I got there, they'd heard enough of that. It wasn't that mm-hmm. they didn't like it. They loved it. But he had unturned all of those stones. And when I got to the cleaner stuff, they're like, oh, this is different. And it works fine. You know, so I think it's about keeping your laughs per minute up. Can be tricky at open mic because you're working on newer material, so you want to make sure you show up at the open mic prepared. I know a lot of people show up at open mic and open a book or a notebook and read off of it, and they're not prepared and they haven't got to the jokes mm-hmm. ever. I never do that. I'll at least know the jokes, know it has 2 or 3 punchlines, taglines before I even take it to an open mic, so I'm not wasting my time or somebody else's. But I think if you approach it that way, yeah, I don't worry about it at all. It's just kind of wading through, and you know, some of the stuff I'm like, I get really down when people are blasphemous. I'm a Christian, and just the way people drop some of the language around that without even thinking about it and without even being respectful, that is a major turnoff for me. But the content, I can just wait for it to be over and go do my set. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's disheartening to hear some of the stuff that they do.
Yeah.
But as far as it affecting my material, it doesn't affect my material at all. You know, I feel that when I get a good reaction in one of those situations, that when I get in front of my type of crowd, those jokes are really going to do well.
Because that's a good way to look at it.
A hostile crowd. Yeah.
Yep. Nope. That's definitely a good perspective. All right. Well, the final question, I have a game that I like to play at the end called Pick a Number. You'll pick a number between 1 and 20. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be related to comedy. So
okay,
just a fun little game.
All right. I'm going to go with lucky number 13.
Lucky number 13. Oh, this is a good one. I'm sure having a family, this is something you've probably have encountered. But how many friendships have you ruined because you refused to play a game of Monopoly mercifully?
We've never got through a full game of Monopoly in my house with my 2 kids, ever. And me, my wife, my 15-year-old, and my 8-year-old, at each time have been the person that walked away and said, I'm done with this. Like, we've just never rode one all the way out. And we're playing the kids level, which isn't that hard. You know, you've got four properties and a playground or whatever it is. It's not that tricky to pull off. But somebody, you can feel a monopoly, like about a sixth time you go around, you're like, there's no way I can win this. Yeah. I'm already down to $1 and I don't own any properties. Rarely can you turn it around. So yeah, I think any of us in our family, once we hit that point, we're like, I'm gonna go see what's on TV. And we just kind of, you can have my money. You can have my two properties.
You're the winner. Oh, that's good. That's good. All right. Well, this has been so much fun. It is always a pleasure talking to you. Where do you want to direct people to find you online? And you know, I know you got your podcast, School Laughs. So
I'll tell you where you can't find me. Clubhouse, because I'm a little too old to figure out something else.
Well, I'm right there with you. Not because of the age thing, but because I don't have an iPhone.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know you had to have an iPhone.
Yeah, too exclusive for me. You got to have an iPhone to join the clubhouse.
Yeah, I'm sure people get a lot out of it, but my goodness, I'd rather go fishing or hit the kayak or ride a bike than spend an hour listening to a faceless face talk in a, I don't know. But you can find me, you know, you see how my name is spelled up here on the screen. It's that with a .com or an @ in front of that for Twitter. Or I do silly little paintings. I'm on Instagram if you want to find me on there. It's Rick, RikPix, Pix Art. Rick Pix Art, if you want to go to Instagram and find out anything. And then if you're into comedy and you want to check out the classes or listen to my podcast, schooloflaughs.com has all that info.
Excellent. And I would recommend taking some of his classes. I've taken them, so I'm not just recommending them without not knowing what they're about, because I've taken some of his business classes. Thank you so much for taking the time. This has just been a pleasure.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com. to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.